This is an
Get In
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter's nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
That's right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to ENN on a balmy Thursday evening. We'll start off today by saying good evening to Don. I averaged a triple-double in back-to-back
seasons. Russell Westbrook.
I'd also like to say good evening to Don.
You familiar with the work of David Blow?
We had a Woj bomb, by the way. I don't know if you saw that.
Really? Bomba Jace or bomb?
Bomba Jace.
Okay. What do you got?
Tom Thibodeau. How did you say it?
Tom Thibodeau.
Thibodeau, the leading candidate for the New York Knicks coaching job. Had his formal interview with the organization today, sources tell the ESPN.
Tom Thibodeau. I'd be excited to Jace.
Tom Thibodeau.
Thibodeau.
All right, well, there's a lot to get to, and we have spent this entire day talking sports and have not mentioned Steven Jackson anymore. We talked about it a lot yesterday. So a little bit of a story here with some extras behind the scenes. Yesterday after the show, I was still feeling pretty worked up about everything.
Yeah, well, you should.
And I decided to randomly DM Steven Jackson, see if he responded. And I said something along the lines of, like, hey, dude, your apology is not going to cut it, because we heard his apology late in the show. And I was basically like, your apology is not going to cut it. If you want to discuss, let me know. He sent me his number, and I called him. And we had a very friendly and positive conversation in which I told him that I did not believe that he hated Jews, but that, you know, his voice right now is important, much more so than even DeSean Jackson. And that when I heard what he had to say, you know, because it basically, the apology we played yesterday, it sounded like he was kind of lashing out at people who, as he put it, made assumptions about him. And so I explained to him, I was like, you know, I don't think it's really fair you're saying that people are making assumptions about you. People can only, they don't know everything about you and what you say privately. They only know what you said publicly. And we had a back and forth, and then he agreed to come on Hot 97 this morning to talk to Ebro and I about it. And I was really happy about it. I tweeted about it, and I put it on Instagram that it was happening, and I said, dialogue for the win. Because I really do think dialogue is the best thing that to try to solve something like this.
Sure.
And then I woke up this morning and saw that he had gone and appeared on Don Lemon on CNN last night. And let's play some of his conversation with Don.
Nobody can find a video or article of me saying I hate anybody. I own something that says love for all who have love for all. I stand on that. In 42 years, you can't say I've approach any race or I stand different. No, I don't support any of that. Maybe I could have been more clear of what I thought DeSean was correct about, but I didn't feel the need to go into a conversation that me and him had about how they was treating him and Riley Cooper. I could have changed those words, but the people that know me, my Jewish friends that I talked to today, they know that the last thing I was spewing was to defend Hitler or any other post. That's why I didn't speak on Hitler or even speak on this post. I spoke on exactly what I agreed with, and they was handling him different than they was handling Cooper. That's the end of it. They can twist it how they want, but that's exactly what it is. I don't hate nobody.
So there he is again saying they can twist it. And I really thought that we had talked about that it wasn't people twisting anything. It's how it came across. He went on to say a little bit more on CNN.
I could have changed my words. But it's nothing that said that I support any of that. There's nothing that I said that I hate anybody. I apologize for my words, and I could have switched up, but that's the end of it. I know I love everybody, and that's how I always stand. And I'm not going to let anybody demean my character, because I'm not standing up here apologizing for a job. I don't work for nobody. I'm apologizing because what I stand for is love for all who have love for all. And I mean that. Mm-hmm. And that's just why I draw the line.
Now, Don Lemon also pointed out that in a conversation that Stephen had yesterday on an IG Live, you know, it actually got a little bit worse because, you know, in one sense, he's talking about how it really didn't have anything to do with what was said. But then in the IG Live, Don, he started talking about some other classic anti-Semitic tropes about the Rothschild family and Jews owning banks and sort of all of the things that are at the crux of this deep Jew hatred that exists, which positions Jews as these evil people who run all the banks, and that every Jew is, you know, it's, I'm not saying he said that specifically, but I'm saying by alluding to it, when you bring that up, and now you're saying, no, I didn't mean anything about that, but oh, let me talk about the Rothschild family. Again, it's just getting worse. It's honestly just getting worse. Yeah. And we talked about it this morning on Hot, and then I got a text from him saying that he was listening to the show, and he heard what Ebro and I were saying, and he decided he didn't want to come on. So I was very disappointed by that. It kind of took the wind out of my sails. But I will say, Don, later in the day, and I want to hear from you on this too, but later in the day, Julian Edelman put up a post on social media, and I thought this was really good.
Even though we're talking about anti-Semitism, I don't want to distract from how important the Black Lives Matter movement is and how we need to stay behind it. I think the Black and Jewish communities have a lot of similarities. One unfortunate similarity is that they are both attacked by the ignorant and the hateful. It's really hard to see the challenges a community can face when you're not part of it. So what we need to do is, we need to listen, we need to learn, we need to act. We need to have those uncomfortable conversations if we're going to have real change. So to that end, Deshaun, let's do a deal. How about we go to D.C. and I take you to the Holocaust Museum, and then you take me to the Museum of African American History and Culture. Afterwards, we grab some burgers and we have those uncomfortable conversations.
I love that Edelman went out there. I mean, these guys are colleagues. He's in a different position. And, you know, maybe he's in a position to where something like that could be really positive. So I thought that was a cool approach from Julian Edelman, and it seemed to get a lot of traction.
And it was a Chris Long that said we can walk and chew gum at the same time, whereas we can have Black Lives Matter, but we can also have other things that we can deal with as well, because there's a lot of hate in this world. There's a lot of misunderstanding in this world. There's a lot of groups of people that feel like they are misunderstood or that they do not get the treatment that they feel they should. And we can deal with that too, no? And not take away from the focus right now, which is Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I thought it was so well said by Edelman. I mean, listen, part of me still feels like I wish we didn't have to be so delicate in explaining why comments like this are bad. And, you know, I do think in some ways we really gave Deshaun the benefit of the doubt by being like, oh, I'm sure he didn't mean it in the worst way humanly possible. When I don't know, maybe he did. I don't know who means what. But I do think also what I would say,
What I would say to Stephen Jackson is the other thing that I kind of disagree with, and we'll see how you feel about it. Is again comparing it to what happened with the. With Riley Cooper. Don't you think that would have went down differently if that happened last week than it did at the time? Now, that doesn't make it right or wrong.
But if you go back and look, it was still pretty – it was a big deal at the time.
No, it was a very big deal.
And the whole idea was taken really seriously.
It was taken seriously, but he didn't lose – he didn't get suspended. He ended up getting a contract. He eventually left the league, but not because of that. And nobody is, at least on this show, ever called the Deshaun Jackson should never play again, although there are a lot of people that feel like he should be suspended by the league or disciplined in some way, shape, or form. But the point is that it's kind of an apples and oranges comparison just because of the climate and the time, because I'm sure it would have been treated differently if Riley Cooper had said that today than, what was that, 8 years ago? Again, it's just as bad 8 years ago as it would be today, but clearly the environments are different.
And so by the way, Riley Cooper apologized profusely. I was reading it today. I went back and read like just how emotional and distraught he was by it. I'm not saying anyone has to believe it, but that's how he approached it. And the Eagles also did make him go to training.
Right.
So it wasn't nothing. You know, and listen, you want to add some rich irony on top of it all. Philadelphia Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie's documentary film company, Play Action Pictures, announced today the completion of their first project, which they've been working on for 3 years, called The Meaning of Hitler. Lurie is an executive producer on the film, and they've been working on it for 3 years, coincidentally. Now, apparently, D-Jax spoke with Lurie and GM Howie Roseman, who are both Jewish, on Tuesday. And Lurie expressed deep disappointment. Jackson expressed a desire to educate himself and to work directly with the Jewish community. So he actually talked to a rabbi already. I never know why people have to talk to a rabbi to understand.
But efforts are being made, though. That's the point.
I mean, I appreciate that, but you could literally just, like, I mean, call up. There's so many people you could talk to. But anyways, either way, that's good. The question is, when people say these things, though, you know, we focus on Hitler because that's the easiest thing to latch on to. But what's more problematic, Don, and I won't go much deeper than this because it's for a different show. What's more problematic is this narrative that's been driven into people a lot recently. Stems, actually, I think, from a lot of history here in New York City. And there is a real issue of people believing the narrative that somehow Jews are, like, at the center of responsibility for black oppression. It's a lie. It's just utterly false on every level. It ignores a rich history of Jewish people and black people working together in civil rights and Jews being outspoken on civil rights forever. It's divisive and it's horrible. And I really wish I understood why it was so deep. And I really think that we focus on the Hitler part because it's easy. But Don, that is a big issue that exists between the Jewish and black community, particularly in New York, but now with YouTube and Twitter everywhere. That needs to be addressed. But at least we're making some progress and conversation appears to be moving forward.
Though I like what you did last night, even though it didn't come to the fruition that you had hoped. But, yeah, I just talk.
That's what I try. I try.
You know, we start, you know, responding to hate by hating kind of defeats the purpose sometimes. Now, sometimes the level of hate is only going to get the reaction of then hating back. But if you take some time, talk it out, give your side of the story, not all the time, but a good percentage of the time, you could have an outcome where everybody feels better about themselves. Because Edelman had completely tore him a new one on social media and felt better and maybe gotten something out of it. Yeah, possibly. But him taking the tact of, hey, let's get together. Let's talk. Let's have a couple of burgers. That's going to go much, much further.
I agree. I think it's much more fruitful.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, RJ, you have a tiger watch over there?
Tiger Watch.
So, Tiger, how did you play today?
Well, got off to kind of a slow start.
Do you feel like you're back to win at this level?
Yeah, I do, because I just did it.
Tiger is back, baby. He's returning to PGA action next week at the Memorial. That's right, baby. It's going down. Muirfield Village, Ohio. Muirfield Village in Ohio.
Good job out of you. Assumption.
Thank you. The Genesis. It's his first time playing since the Genesis Invitational back.
Can't wait. I will watch every
golf. Well, I'll be there. I'm excited to watch LT Gray return.
What?
LT Gray.
Golf is garbage.
No, Don. Tiger. Thank you. Don's excited, I can tell.
You can? Just oozes through all the wires, right?
Blah. I can sense it. It's very, very clear to me. But, hey, that's just me.
It's a show!
All right. You want to talk some UFC 251?
Sure.
Okay.
The other day, Jorge Masvidal said he's going to, quote, baptize Kamaru Usman.
Why?
Because they're fighting on Saturday. But Usman responded to Masvidal.
A real gangster don't need to talk about what they're going to do or what they're capable of doing or wearing pink robes on a two-seater plane, private jet or whatever. A real gangster don't need to talk about that. You know, we all know in most cases, the loudest one in the room is usually the weakest one in the room. I don't need to wear pink robes and pretend like I'm eating pizza on the plane. Everybody knows I'm dieting right now. I'm not doing all that. I'm dieting because I'm preparing to go out there. And he says he wants to baptize. Well, guess what? I'm going to bless him with these hands and these fists. So July 11th, UFC 251, that's what you guys are going to see.
Saturday night, I'll tell you, there's a lot of talk, but these guys, when it comes down to just action, you're talking about two great fighters in their prime. Saturday night, UFC 251. Now, the ACC will be delaying the start of all fall sports until at least September 1st. This follows the decision, a similar decision by the Patriot League. This will include several sports, including it will impact several sports, I should say, including soccer and field hockey, but not football. It marks the first decision by a Power 5 conference, though. The Patriot League pushed their start back till September 4th. The Ivy League, of course, announced the cancellation of all fall sports yesterday. The ACC football schedule still set to begin as of now when NC State visits Louisville on September 2nd. Don, you want to place a bet on whether that game happens on September 2nd?
I don't think it will.
Meaning,
you?
Nope. Maybe NFL. Don't see college football happening.
And that's why if no college football happens, at least until maybe the spring, because they could do that too, you know.
Yeah, why not?
That wouldn't that kind of embolden the NFL to say, well, why don't we wait?
No. That would embolden the NFL to go, ooh, all the attention to ourselves. We'll run games on Saturdays,
well,
too.
That is certainly the reality, right, that they'll have. But because I think the NFL could totally wait. And if they want to do it for money, Peter, waiting could be more lucrative. Because then if they wait, then they could be that much closer to actually being able to play in front of fans. So not only could it be a safer environment if you waited till, say, January to play, or decided we're gonna play when we get a vaccine. We've got too many players, too physical a sport. We can't social distance on the field at all. So we're going to wait till there's a vaccine, or at least into January. Players are safer. Fans back in the seats. Play the Super Bowl and then go into the summer. How great would that be?
Listen, as long as we get a season, I mean, no one wants it to happen on time, I think, more than I do. I mean, you know Don better than anyone. Football's for me, it's tops. I will be very disappointed with no football season, but got to make the right decision. Now, go ahead, Don.
I was going to say, but just delaying it, because what you could end up having, Peter, if you're not careful, is having like replacement players again, where you're going to finish the season, but you're not going to recognize any of the players because so many guys are out because of testing positive. Do you want that? Yeah, we finished the season, but I couldn't name half the quarterbacks in the league. You don't want that.
Yeah, how worthwhile is that, really? Now, speaking of football and my interest, my rooting interest in football, the Washington Redskins story continues. Amazon is pulling Washington Redskins gear from its stores as the NFL team mulls a change of name.
Right now they're just mulling what the change should be, not whether they're going to change it or not. Right?
They can't possibly
be mulling coming back with the same name, are they?
How could they be?
So they got to be mulling what the change is going to be. And if that's the case, then you should announce we are changing the name.
Agreed.
Stay tuned. We'll have a new name. We'll have a new logo. It's going to be great. But just so you know, we're changing the name. Why would you even want it out there with all this, that there's still a possibility you're going to be stubborn and keep it?
It's a great point. All you're really doing is hurting any goodwill you're trying to get from changing it, which you've basically already ruined anyway.
Because what's the press conference going to sound like? We mulled it over, and we had a discussion, and we decided we're going to keep it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what he would do? I would not be surprised if he found like a bunch of First Nation people that would stand behind him, like find everyone that doesn't have a problem with the logo, have like this massive press conference with all of this presence saying, the Native American community doesn't have a problem with it, I'm going to stick with it.
Can you imagine how bad a look that would be?
But he would probably think, well, why is it a bad look? You're saying that we're offending Native American people. Here are a few of many that disagree with you.
So we remember Patrick Ewing had COVID recently.
Sure.
Right? He talked about it a bit on ABC7. He was asked about if he was afraid at all during his fight with COVID.
Definitely, especially when you're hearing that, you know, a lot of people were dying with it. So, yes, I was afraid, but I thought that the nurse and the doctors did an outstanding job. You do need to take all the precautions that you need to take to make sure that you're not only you're safe, but your family's also safe.
Not a ton of information there.
No, but... Yeah, why wouldn't you be scared? I mean, how old is he now?
Patrick's got to be mid-50s.
And I don't know if he's got any underlying symptoms, but why do you want to take that chance? You know how many people, Peter, and I thought
actually,
about
it might
this,
be 60. Wow.
That like, how many people...
57.
That... Like, they don't go to the doctor, they don't get physicals, found out they had an underlying symptom when they got COVID-19?
Yeah. That's part of this whole thing, has been everyone's like, oh, no, I don't have any underlying symptoms. And then you get there and go, oh, I didn't even realize I did. Because how right. are all of us going to the doctor to check out everything to make sure none of us have... over time had any sort of long-term slow developing illness that exists?
Right. So, and then you find out, oh, well, you know, you've got some form of cancer or you've got diabetes or you've got high blood pressure and you didn't go to the doctor for like the last 3-4 years and now you found out, oh, you got COVID-19 and we're really worried about you because you have high blood pressure. So I would think that Patrick Ewing, being a coach, has gotten regular physicals and all that. But even if you're perfectly healthy, Peter, it's got to be scary.
Listen, I desperately don't want it. I still need to get a test. I still haven't gotten an antibody test. So I've had my own delays. I've been antsy just about going to get an antibody test. Just haven't particularly wanted to go in, which is probably not smart. But... I haven't been anxious to go to CityMD and get it done. Don, this is pretty cool. ESPN Films today announced that there is a project executive produced by Jimmy Kimmel. Okay.
Okay.
And shout out to my boy Nick Trotta at MLB, who is a producer on it. It's going to be directed by Nick Davis, who did the Ted Williams doc, The Greatest Hitter Who Ever Lived. Don, a multi-part doc on the 86 Mets.
Ooh. Oh.
How do you like them apples?
There's a lot there. Now, that's a documentary that if they air it like they did The Last Dance, I'd be really excited for those Monday shows.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine for us?
Because we know people. We Keith is a friend of the show. Daryl Strawberry is a friend of the show.
Not to mention just how dialed in this whole city is on the 86 Mets.
There's something about like certain teams, honestly, and I don't know what it is. Because there could be better teams. There's always, maybe I don't know if this is the way it is in D.C. because it wasn't like a lot of winning outside of the Redskins. But they just, for some reason, those teams resonate more so than any other. And that 86 team just seems to resonate with people.
Well, it's not only is it the last time that this historic franchise won, but and the characters, Don.
Well,
I mean, you have so much. Like, you have so much to get to before you even think about Game 6, right? Like, there's so many layers to it.
I mean, the infighting, the drugs, the, as you said, the amazing season, the great postseason games.
The personalities.
I mean, you can have documentaries on individuals. You can do
a
documentary on Daryl Strawberry.
Well, there's Daryl and Doc.
Right, but those right. You had so think about that. It's there's a 30 for 30, you know, within the 30 for 30. Like,
yep.
It's incredible the amount of conversation that you can have. Just good, bad, such a unbelievably interesting team.
Now, let's go back to this day, 2011.
The 3-2. That one's drilled deep to left field. Going back, Joyce, looking up. See ya! 3,000! History with an exclamation point! Oh, what a way to join the 3,000 hit club! Derek Jeter has done it in grand style!
What a good call.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.